This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Also presents Take Care On Air.
Interviews, current affairs and events from across Victoria.
Also is
your community hub and also is
proud to sponsor Joy.
Hello and welcome to another Take Care On Air. I'm Kath Duncan.
And I'm Shane McMaster, coming at you live, Care of the Also Foundation, and giving you your weekly dose of current affairs, community development, arts and culture, news and views.
Oh, indeedy-doo. And today on the show, well, we've got a bit of a theme running today, and the theme is about anti-homophobia. I have to get it right, biphobia and transphobia, particularly with young people, with a group here in Melbourne who are working with schools. And from Geelong, Beyond That's So Gay, we're going to be checking out a new publication from the same man who brought us Pride and Prejudice, which was a very successful campaign that was adopted in schools and is now part of the curriculum across Tasmania. Also, look, I am just so totally excited about this. Remember Prisoner. Who could forget Prisoner? Today, we're going to be talking to Betty Bobbitt, who played apparently the American character, Judy Bryant. Now, I remember the show, but I don't remember the characters, but Betty will remind us, because Betty Bobbitt has done what nobody else has managed to do and brought out a book called From the Outside. And apparently it's doing very well. Also, of course, we're going to be checking with our mate in the bush, Damien Stevens, and tell us about that other thing, Shane, the part I'm really looking forward to.
Pledger Salon, is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yes, it's the monthly meeting of Pledger Salon Melbourne. This group is a really fascinating group. They meet once a month to talk about sex in a positive way. So we'll be speaking with Louise from Device a bit more about that in the show today.
Oh, and she's going to be touching on the delicate art of strap-ons. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
All this, lots more coming up. First up, though, the Melbourne Sexuality, Sex and Gender Collective are a group of young people who are working up to their campaign launch in a few weeks. They're tackling homophobia, biphobia and transphobia and sexism in schools. Now, I think what's interesting about this is their target is the delivery of sex education, and they're also looking at young men's behaviours. Joining us now, one of the founding members, Aaron McAleff. I've got that right, haven't I, Shane?
Yeah, so we have Aaron on the phone right now, I believe. Hey, Aaron, welcome to the show.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. So could you tell us a bit about the reasons why you decided to start up the group?
Well, we initially started the project. I'm a member of Socialist Alliance and a few members of youth transgender organisation YGender also helped out the campaign. And we initially saw it as a way to engage young people in issues that concern them and directly affect them. And I guess the overwhelming response we were getting from these young people is that the need for better sex education in schools, which seeks to eradicate phobias and sexism as such, is something that's desperately needed. So that was initially why we decided to go ahead with it.
It's been many years since I was in school. And our sex education at the time was, as I remember, pretty much about reproduction, you know, like how to and how not to have babies. Has it changed at all?
Well, might not have been as long since I was in high school, but no, from what I can remember, it hasn't really changed that much. And the message I'm getting from the young people I'm speaking to is that no, it's more or less the same now, very much centered around reproduction and still getting the message that the best form of safe sex is abstinence. So
that never works.
Exactly.
Aaron, can you talk a bit about how you're going to, I guess, you know, persuade schools or work with schools to kind of shift their thinking?
Well, I guess the first point of call that where we want to go with the campaign is actually getting the word out to other like-minded young people that we're around. So we see it as, I guess, a change that has got to be something that kind of demanded from the students themselves in order to get the attention of these schools, because schools need to know that their students actually have a change that they want to see in the way that they're being taught sex education, and that, you know, they're not going to really pipe down until they're listened to and they start getting taught the kind of sex education they want to be taught.
So if I'm a young person, Aaron, and I'm really passionate about getting better sex education in schools, I want to address homophobia, transphobia, biphobia, those kinds of issues, is there a way I can get involved with the collective?
Absolutely. I'd say the best point of contact, well, given that we live in the Facebook generation now, is get in touch with the Facebook group. That's got all our contact details, both myself and other conveners.
Yeah, so people search for the Melbourne Sexuality, Sex and Gender Collective on Facebook.
Yep, that's the one. And we also do have a WordPress site as well. So if you do a Google search on the collective, that should come up also.
Now, I guess what I'm finding interesting is this seems to be the new face of the left, really, doesn't it? Because, like, when I was a young one and I'm still young. No, not really. Anyway, you know, the socialist left and stuff, we were talking a lot about sort of, you know, international events and anarchy and so forth. And these days it seems like it's much more focused at home.
Well, yeah, I think that's been the really the overwhelming message in the way the education system's structured now, is that all matters to do with sex education and sexuality and gender identification have all been kind of forced into the family home and made into a private issue that's between parents and their children. And you can kind of see the effects that that's having on young people in regards to their sexuality now.
I'm just kind of interested in how you do tackle things like, you know, transphobia and biphobia in particular. I think we're a bit more used to the, you know, homophobia campaigns, but those other ones are sort of new, I think, to some people or perhaps some young people. How do you go about, you know, educating about them?
Well, particularly in regards to transphobia, it's, I guess to my knowledge, it's really something I've only been in contact campaign-wise with the last year or so, or year and a half to 2 years. I went to the Sex and Gender Diverse Conference in Redfern, Sydney last December, and I guess that what I was getting out of the conference was that trans rights, intersex rights is something that has been put on the back burner for a long time.
Yes.
And I guess one of their main frustrations is that, you know, any rainbow campaign is them kind of feeling like the T in the I is just kind of, it's like a tag along or add in at the end just as a matter of political correctness. It's just something that they want changed, and they certainly want their own demands to be seen with the same importance as homophobia, biphobia, sexism as well. I think with, in regards to education, and this comes back to the way sex education is taught in schools as well, the whole thing about gender identity is something that young people are given very mixed messages about. I mean, right from when children are preschool age, they're given these messages in non-certain terms from teachers and parents that, you know, if you're male, you act this way, behave this way, dress in this way, and this is what's expected of you by society, and pretty much the same deal if you're female. So I think it's something that's really driven into kids' heads from a young age, and therefore by the time they reach their adolescent years, they're confused or they think there's something wrong with them if they're not conforming to the behaviours that's expected of their gender.
Yeah, well, it's great that you and your group are wanting to clear up those messages a bit for everyone out there. So just one last thing, I just wanted to mention that the collective has campaign launch on St. Patrick's Day, 17th of March.
Yeah, absolutely. So Saturday the 17th of March at 4 p.m, level 10 in the Orso building.
Yep, so that's 225 Burke Street for all those people out there. Yep.
That's where we are right now.
225. And we've got a few guest speakers lined up already. Sally Goldner, long-time trans activist who I guess a lot of listeners would already be familiar with, is going to be speaking at the launch. Also, one of our younger organisers in the campaign, Karina Saunders, who's actually a high school student at Brunswick Secondary College, is going to be talking about sexism and the relevance of feminism in the modern day and whether it is still relevant and something we can draw lessons from to, you know, take our own campaign forward.
Fantastic. And for further information on the Melbourne Sexuality, Sex and Gender Collective, go to Facebook, don't we all? Thanks very much for speaking to us. That's Aaron Mikhailov there today. You're with Take Care On Air, of course. This week it's me, Kath Duncan, and the great Shane McMaster coming at you live and hot from Joy.
Joy 94.9.
We're having a great time in studio.
Indeed we are. And in the studio now we have Dan Whithouse. He's a youth educator and queer advocate with a passion for homophobia.
Anti-homophobia, as the case may be.
Anti-homophobia, yeah. That's thanks for correcting me on that one, Kath. Yeah. Joy listeners might remember Dan from 2010. He did a 38-week tour of Australia, getting a bit of a snapshot as to how schools are tackling homophobia. So welcome to the studio, Dan.
Yeah, great to be here.
Hey,
thanks,
Dan,
for having me.
Now, Pride and Prejudice is where you started.
Correct. In the windy city of Geelong, doing that in an all-boys Catholic school and then spreading out to a range of schools down there and looking at what we could do around challenging homophobia. So,
and I've heard Tasmanian schools have totally picked up on that campaign.
Yeah, probably more so than any other states and territories. Mm. And that's, I think, largely due to the great work of, you know, people like Rodney Croom and a whole bunch of people who've been doing a lot of work with the education department down there. So, yeah, they would be leading the way, I guess, in terms of the states and territories. I know that Victoria would hate for me to say that.
But well done to get that out there.
Thank you.
And now, right now, Beyond That's So Gay, and it's a book and a book tour. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I put together a book based on kind of, you know, over a decade of experiences of working in schools, and it kind of centres around what can teachers and health professionals who work with young people practically do when they come across challenging homophobia, when young people kind of say this term that we hear everywhere, that's so gay, and also what do you then do to support those young people in all parts of Australia? Because I guess my tour kind of sprung from that idea of, you know, I guess in terms of this work nationally, a lot of the work centres on metropolitan areas and also the east coast of Australia, and there were so many stories and so many kind of ideas from across the country I wanted to collect, and that's why I jumped in a truck and went driving.
What was it like? Did you hit resistance?
Yeah, look, I hit resistance, but I kind of say to everyone it was like 266 days of Groundhog Day. So, although people think that...
sounds fun.
Yeah, look, although people think that it's often people chasing me out of town with, you know, pitchforks and things that are really overt, it tends to be kind of tame, subtle and predictable homophobia. That's the kind of resistance they face. So it was more like I could have been bored to death with people's subtle homophobia rather than I was kind of, you know, confronted with it, or I had to kind of run out of town. So that surprises a lot of people.
So having completed the tour and come back to normal everyday life in Australia, what have you been doing since then to work with homophobia, addressing that in schools?
Yeah, look, there's been a lot of follow-up with different regional and rural areas. So I've been travelling back and forth between lots of places. It's nice not to live out of a truck constantly for a year. It's nice to come back home and pack and do the washing. But, you know, I've also been doing some stuff with Australian Marriage Equality. They asked me to put together some workshops. So that's meant I've been continuing conversations across the country all of last year and into this year. And I guess for me, what I'm trying to do now is to think about how am I going to kind of get all of this information out there. Although I've been working hard for the last kind of 12 to 18 months, I really want to continue getting these stories out there, because, for example, I was just up at Sydney and I spoke to so many people from country areas who are still telling the same stories that I heard as I kind of drove around the country, and I expect those stories to continue. And I guess people like to see their own kind of experiences and stories reflected across the country and say, hey, I'm not alone. There are a lot of voices who have a similar story to me, but also here's what can be done about it, but also making sense of their experience. Hey, I'm in the bush and I'm having a good time. You know, I'm not sure why that is. Why am I different to all these other people? And we can start to unpack that based on the things that I've found around the country.
How do you tackle a sort of a homophobic redneck? I don't mean physically. I mean, how do you kind of deal with that? Or what's your argument? Or is it, do you not have one for that? Or
the best thing I think you can do is that, you know, I say to people that I was challenging homophobia one cuppa at a time, and I always seek to engage people. So when I do talk with people, people often think that it's all about me and the things that I'm saying, but the most important thing I can do is engage that person and listen. And, you know, probably about 75 to 80% of the time that I'm engaging someone who's resistant, I'll be listening. And I'll be listening, trying to kind of assess where are they at, where are the trigger points, what are the kind of key sticking things that we need to talk about. And, you know, I've written a book on this. I've got lots of resources on my website, you know, in order for people to kind of tackle. But that's partly, you know, what I'm going to be presenting next week when I do this kind of filmed event night, is trying to get some of these ideas up onto YouTube so that people kind of have these resources and they don't necessarily have to come to a training of mine in a metropolitan centre. They can kind of go online and access those strategies and those ideas a little bit more freely.
Tell us a bit more about this filmed event you have coming up.
Yeah, look, I've got this fantastic space in Ascot Vale. It's the Canterbury Street Stables. And what we're trying to do is we're going to have something like 75 to 80 people who are going to be there. There will be refreshments, which people are happy about. But what I'm going to do is film me talking about the tour, the strategies that I use, the kind of stories that I encountered along the way, trying to look at some of the patterns and themes and trying to get that into a format that will be then uploaded onto YouTube. So people can not only engage with the event, they can not only come along and hear about that and have kind of fun and hear some interesting stuff, but they'll then be a part of something which is a resource that's going to go up online and it's going to be spread out across, you know, every nook and cranny of our great land.
Do you really think we can turn the situation around?
Look, I think that we can, but I think that a lot of people think that it's just going to come with, you know, perhaps legislation change, or it's going to be with a government program here and there. The thing that would change things most in Australia, I think, think in the next 3 to 5 years is if we had an army of people going out and having cuppas with a whole bunch of people all over the country, because it's the everyday conversations that will turn people around. It's the connections, it's the sharing of stories that make the difference, rather than it being just about I'm going to give you a lecture or I'm going to kind of say the magic response to that, so again it's going to make it all better. It's about engagement, and it's really difficult for people to not like you or be against you once they've sat down and had a cuppa with you, which is why I had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cuppas in that 38-week tour of Australia.
So you're saying that the best way to tackle homophobia is to just have more conversations, bring it out in the open, all of us just taking responsibility to address that issue?
Well, where we can. I think, you know, often people say to me, well, I can't drive around the country, I can't do what you do. And as I say to people, like, that's what I've got the opportunity to do. The most important thing that every single one of us can do is talk to the people around us in our everyday life. Rather than trying to do something special or more than what we ordinarily do, we've got friends, family, teammates in sporting teams, work colleagues, people, you know, in volunteer organizations, whoever that might be, our neighbors. The conversations and the way we present ourselves with those people are going to be more important than me driving around this country 43 times. Like, it really is. And so what I try and do is say, rather than there's something special and magic, it's what you do with the everyday people around you, because we know all the research says that the best way to tackle homophobia is for someone who is homophobic to have someone who they have an ongoing, significant, existing relationship, for them to come out to them, and that will change their attitudes and their behaviours quicker than any educational program, awareness campaign, network, whatever that might be. So that's the key, and that's why I try and get everyday people doing what they do, because it's more important than what the rest of us could do combined.
So if people are interested in finding out more about your work and what you do generally?
I would love for them to go to my website, which is thatssogay.com.au. The filmed event is the first thing that will pop up, and they can also find out about my book, about Pride and Prejudice. There are free resources on there about the findings that I found on the tour. There's written blogs, there's video blogs. You can kind of catch up on what happened on the tour, and you can also get contact details as well. But please, if you're interested, come along. You know, feel free to bring someone special, and let's make it a hoot and get this stuff on YouTube so regional, rural and remote communities can actually access this stuff and go out and go forth and multiply in a safe and LGBT way.
Daniel, you're a star. You're with Take Care On Air. We've been talking to Daniel Whithouse, educator and sort of all-round anti-homophobic raconteur by the sounds of it. That event, again, next Tuesday, 13th of March. I love this. The Canterbury Street Stables. I love that. I've got that it's Flemington, but you say Ascot Vale.
Oh, it's Ascot Vale, Flemington. It depends on what map you go with or whether it's the Melways, but basically it's around that vicinity. You'll find it if you chuck it into Google. So
sounds like a top event. You may even get the chance to go international or national on YouTube by just clapping or standing or making a lot of noise in
the
background.
Let's go viral.
Indeed. Let's just get this out there. Coming up very shortly, something I've been looking forward to. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of strap-ons. Stay with us.
Joy. 94.9.
Hands-on pleasure and strap-ons galore.
At Pleasure Salon Melbourne.
Yep, they're taking a break from their usual Monday night extravaganza. They're going to be at the Loop Bar tonight.
Now, who better for the job if we're going to be talking about strap-ons and pleasure and all the rest of it, but sexual health master's candidate. I love that. I think I should have done that degree, really. I won't go into what I did do. And worker at, of course, the famous Melbourne sex shop Device. We welcome to the show Louise Device. Hi, Louise.
Hi.
What's first on the agenda when it comes to hands-on sex for you?
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Oh, well, what are you going to talk about first tonight?
Oh, tonight I'm going to be talking about strap-ons specifically. So, as you said, I do work at Device, the sex shop in Richmond, which is a fabulous little shop, which everyone should go check out. But tonight I'm doing a specific little slot on strap-ons.
Now, I was talking to Shane about this, and I was saying one of the issues I have with strap-ons is that lots of the time when you go to do the thing, they're all cold and slimy. Have you got any suggestions?
The strap-on is cold and slimy. You mean the harness or the dildo?
The dildo. So have you got any suggestions for how not to be cold and slimy?
You mean for the person, the receptive partner?
Yes.
Right, okay. You can actually warm a dildo by putting it in warm water beforehand.
What a good idea.
Yeah, that is an option. Or you can just warm it up by hand or against the body as well. You can really make a dildo part of the whole fun experience. Rather than just calling upon it at the moment you need it for penetration, you could really introduce it a bit earlier and make it warm with your body temperature.
I think that's very good advice.
So warm up the lube. That cold and slip-free, slimy lube is never any fun. Try and keep it warm. You can put the lube in some warm water as well, like the bottle inside a bowl of warm water, or just, again, sort of keep it somewhere nearby so that it's not freezing.
Let's talk about harnesses, because lots of people don't get the right fit.
That's true.
Yep. What's important for a good fitting harness?
With a good fitting harness, you want one that stays close to the body. You want the dildo to be snug and close against your pubic region. A leather harness will feel quite different from a more elasticy kind of cotton harness, and a lot of that's about personal preference. But a lot of people find that leather really feels like it's part of your skin. It really sits close, so people like it for that reason. Whereas some of the more elasticy ones have a much more slim profile, so people like that, I guess, since it also feels quite natural against the body. So firstly, a close fit's important. Secondly, the positioning of the dildo is important. Often wearers of strap-ons will complain that the dildo might be sitting a bit low and kind of like angle it away, that they don't have a lot of control. So a way to fix that is to get a dildo with an O-ring, the ring that you put the dildo through, that sits up a bit higher on the pubic bone, because you'll have a lot more control that way. The trade-off with dildo positioning is that when the dildo is a bit lower, you do have a lot more sensation on the genital. So there's kind of, in some ways, a little bit sensitive trade-off. But it's just a matter of getting one that works for you and also works for how you want to use it. Because if you're using it with quite a lot of physical energy, it could be different from using it in a more sort of slow way. So
one thing I have found, perhaps, is almost like a level of defensiveness among people that like to wear, like that like to pack them, about the correct procedures and so forth. Almost like, yeah, I know all that already. Like, whatever. Have you found that?
I think I know what you're talking about, and I would say that I've mainly encountered that amongst people. This is just from my personal experience. I'm not saying this is generally, but amongst people who don't necessarily have a massive amount of experience with them. And so they have certain ideas about how it's supposed to work, and perhaps people who have a bit more experience would feel more at ease with just kind of going with the flow and having a laugh if it doesn't pan out exactly as they planned. But that is also based on personality, and it depends a lot on the kind of sex you're having as well.
Yeah, some very knowledgeable advice about the use of strap-ons and dildos there. So I understand, Louise, that you're doing a bit of a demonstration tonight at Pleasure Salon.
Well, I don't know if demonstration is the word. I don't want to oversell things. There won't be any live sex on stage.
Well, not this time anyway.
We will definitely be getting some strap-ons on and showing how they fit and how to get one that fits you, yeah.
Tell us a bit more about what else people can expect at tonight's meeting.
So tonight at Pleasure Salon, I will be speaking about strap-ons, as I said, and there's also going to be another presenter talking about sexological bodywork, which is something I don't know much about.
Sounds very mysterious and interesting.
Yes, it does.
Now, the way the thing works is it's kind of like a talky forum bit, and then people kind of mingle and, you know, drink and party on.
Yes. Pleasure Salon, the exact format of the event changes depending on who's speaking and exactly what's going on that evening. But tonight, the format is that I'll be doing an introductory session of a sort of a 20 to 30 minute spot, and then there'll be a main presenter for maybe an hour, and that's going to be broken up into different sections. So I'll be talking, then there'll be some milling time and times for drinks, then there'll be the other presenter talking, then there'll be a break, and the other presenter will be talking again, and then there'll be time at the end for people to have drinks and to wander around. Some other pleasure salons, they have a panel set up, so there'll be a selection of speakers who have expertise on a certain theme, and it'll be more a Q&A with the audience. Sometimes it's only one presenter, sometimes there'll be a performance, all sorts of different things, but it's designed to showcase different aspects of the sex positive community and to create a forum where people can attend and meet other people who might have similar interests. So in a non-sex on-site environment, if that makes sense. It's a type of place for people to meet socially and to interact and have a drink and that kind of thing. So it's a part of Sex Positive Melbourne.
Sounds very cool to me. And I understand Pleasure Salon Melbourne are affiliated with our Take Care program.
Yep, Take Care out there is a proud partner and sponsor of Pleasure Salon Melbourne. Yeah, we're proud that they're talking about sex on a monthly basis in a positive and inclusive way.
Take Care out there, of course, making sure that the safe sex message passes through into all the different communities that Pleasure Salon intersects with.
Fantastic. Thanks for talking with us today, Louise.
No problem. Hopefully I'll see you tonight at Loop Bar.
Yeah, all my friends are going. So
fabulous.
I guess I better go. Well, everyone's got a little bit of an interest in this one.
You've got some time to think of some special questions and put me on the spot in front of everyone.
Yeah, I might land on the cold and slimy again. Okay, so that's Pleasure Salon Melbourne tonight from 7:30 at the Loop Laneway Bar, which is in, is it Myers Place? Is that
yeah,
how
Myers.
In Melbourne, in the city. It just sounds like a total hoot. There'll be other presenters there as well as Louise, and we can all check out Louise's dildo collection, which I imagine must be very impressive. Further info, go to Facebook. I find Pleasure Salon Melbourne has got quite a little presence. And thanks for that, Louise.
No problem.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Take Care on Air with Shay McMaster and Kath Duncan here on Joy FM.
Now, look, we're so totally excited. Everyone remembers Prisoner, surely. Well, everyone that's my age anyway. It was probably our most famous export, I'd say, through the 70s or was it the 80s?
It's a bit before my time, but it's still a really iconic, famous Australian show.
Now, as it turns out, one of the performers from prisoner, Bobby Bobbitt, whose name on the show was Judy Bryant, has brought out a book called From the Outside, Judy Bryant, Prisoner, Cell Block H, which was the name of the show in the States. And we have Betty on the line. Hello there, Betty.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, we're just so stoked to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Now, can I just ask, you've been in Australia since the early 1960s.
Yes, nearly 50 years. It'll be 50 years next month.
And do people recognise you when you go out?
They do. Makes me think I looked like a fat old lady when I was in my 20s.
Sorry, that's good. Can you tell us a bit about your character? What was Judy like?
Well, I initially auditioned for the role of Bea Smith, but I wasn't tough enough, you know. So about a year later, they contacted me again and said, would you be happy to play a lesbian? And I said, yeah, okay. And in I went, and I was supposed to play this tough lesbian. They told me she was what was known as a diesel dyke. I never heard the expression. I thought maybe she drove a truck. I didn't know. Anyway, of course, my own personality was there as well, and I just felt that she wasn't as tough as that. The dialogue, the scripts, everything showed her to be a more compassionate person. So she was supposed to be in for 13 weeks and die of a heart attack, and at the end of the time, towards the end of the time, they decided they liked my character, so they gave my girlfriend a push down the stairs to kill her and gave me a pacemaker, and I lived on for 5 years.
Oh, congratulations on surviving your potential demise.
I know, I know.
Now, my notes tell me that you yourself were a closeted lesbian.
Do your notes tell you that?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't a closeted thing. I was raising children, and I didn't like going out into gay venues and things where I would always be spotted as the actor that I, because I did other things aside from prisoner. So I was just a quiet person in that regard, and I just stayed in my circle of friends. So if you read the book, you'll find out the story that's kind of wonderful about it all.
And apparently one of those wonderful things was that lots of people wrote to you and told you how important it was to see you there and coming to terms with their own sexuality. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, that was wonderful. In the early 80s, people were not very tolerant. Well, they're still not in many cases, but they weren't very tolerant to gays. And my character, because she was sympathetic and likable, people who were gay themselves and young, they'd go like, well, you know, I can come out. Judy can do it. I can do it. Because Judy told her daughter, and there was a whole storyline about that, you know. And it was really hard. Yes, she had a daughter. But it was really difficult stuff. So when people would write to me, I would be so proud and so pleased that I could help young people. And it's still happening to this day in the showing it again. I get Facebook messages from young people who go, you've helped me. Thank you. You know, and that's just wonderful.
Yeah, it's awesome you got that support, you know, and that people find that you've been a source of support for them as well.
That's right.
I imagine at the time it would have been quite groundbreaking being on the show as a lesbian character on TV.
Yeah.
How could you tell us a bit more about that experience?
Yeah, it had been done with a previous character in the show. Carol Burns played Frankie Doyle. And
that's right.
But she was more like tough, you know, and rough and unhappy, and that was kind of a stereotype in a way. Was the character that I played, they wrote her to be just a normal person. Well, she wasn't that normal in some of the things she did, but just a normal person with real feelings and caring and anger as well and all of those things. So it was really great just showing her as being a real person.
Have you had that sort of success since? What did you do after Prisoner?
Well, mainly in my career, being a stage actor. I love the theatre. And as soon as the TV series was over, I went back into the theatre for like the next month. I was working at the Melbourne Theatre Company. And over the years, I've kind of slowed down a bit with it all because I've did other things and I've been writing a bit. And still, I did a play a couple of years ago, but I'm getting rheumatism now, so I'm not really great at running around anymore and up and down stairs and things. But I'm mainly in the theatre, and I did Nonsense and different plays and things. So, yeah, it's been good.
Betty Bobbitt, you're just a star. You were a star then. You're a star now. If you want to get hold of Betty's book, it's called From the Outside. I think it will sell like hotcakes myself.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, if people go into sales@bettybobbitt.com, that's the site where they order it. I mail it myself. You know, it's really good.
Wow, well done.
Yeah.
Thanks. Personally mail a copy.
Thanks for talking to us today,
thank
Betty.
You.
And good luck with the book.
Thanks so much. All the best to you.
Thank you. I don't think Prisoner's ever going to die. It will live with us forever, Prisoner. There was never any show like it, and I don't think there's been any show since.
Isn't that wonderful?
Indeed. You're with Take Care on Air, of course, with Kath Duncan and Shane McMahon. Master. Coming up, we're going to be checking in with our favourite Damien Stevens out there from Goulburn Valley Pride. He's going to be talking about their experiences in Mardi Gras and what's happening around the region. Stay with us.
Joy 94.9.
Time for Damien Stevens, the convener of Goulburn Valley Pride, talking to us from Shepparton, but having just come back from Mardi Gras.
Good afternoon, folks. Indeed, we have 24 passengers on a luxurious coach to Sydney to see Kylie, Magda, RuPaul. What a weekend.
Tell us some highlights. I hope you Victorian guys like made your presence very Victorian and obvious and stuff.
Oh, we did. And I think we're going to march next year. We had a good representation, and I think we can double that and, you know, get a float or at least march in the parade next year. The parade itself was amazing. Several of us were in the glam stand. There was a bit of rain, but it didn't interfere with us at all. We had our ponchos on. It's amazing how warm a thin piece of garbage bag is, I tell you.
Excellent.
And the after party, amazing. I've never been, and I was overwhelmed by the extravagance and how well set up it was. And it was an awesome, awesome weekend.
Totally a blast. Now, look, we've only got a moment or so. Could you just give us a quick wrap-up of what's happening in the bush?
I will. We're gearing up for Chill Out this year. Expect to see all of the regional groups this weekend, certainly the street parade and at Carnival Day in Daylesford. Over in Bendigo coming up, or Grampians rather, organised by CAN in Bendigo. They've got a Getting It Together for men living in the Grampians who've recently come out. Look out for that on 16th to 18th of March. Don't forget the BQFF, the Bendigo Queer Film Festival, coming up mid-April as well. Down in Ballarat, midway through this month, the 16th of March, they've got their dance party. That's the third Friday night of every month. All of this info is at Take Care website, of course. Down Geelong Way next Monday night, Hot Topics. It's everything you wanted to know about sex ed. Trivia event down there, organised by GARF. That's on Facebook. Mildura up there, they've renamed their group to the Sunraysia Gay and Lesbian Community Group. Check out their new website, gaysunraysia.org.au. They're all on Facebook. We're all online. Back over at Albury Redonga Way in the next few weeks, they've got their fortnightly drinks, coffee club, and a camping trip coming up at the end of March as well. So humephoenix.com.au for them. And here in Shepparton, plenty of events between now and the end of the month. We've got a team swimming in the upcoming MS Mega Swim to raise money for MS. We've got steak nights, movie nights, and don't forget in November, the first festival for Shepparton will be Out in the Open, a health and wellbeing day, followed by Carnival Day here in Shepparton, outintheopen.org.au. That and more coming up.
Oh, well done, Damien. You've brought us right up to the top of the hour. Well, that's all from us for another Take Care On Air for this week. We'll be back again next week when apparently we have a focus on sport. You've been with Kath Duncan.
And Shay McMaster. And thanks to the Gazman. As always, for doing such a great job behind the scenes.
See you again next week. Have a great day here on Joy.
Also presents Take Care On Air.
Interviews, current affairs and events from across Victoria.
Also is
your community hub. And also is
proud to sponsor Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.